welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet, and today is Friday, August 19th, 2016. With me today, I have Dave Hamilton. How are you, Dave?
I'm fantastic. I'm glad to be here. It's good to be here. One of those two things is true.
It's, you know, they both sounded acceptable, so I'm okay either way. John Martellaro, how are you today?
I am good.
Excellent. It's good to have you here as well. And someone's phone rang. Now I know who's buying the beer tonight.
It's on me.
Awesome. Awesome. Hey, speaking of calls, what a wonderful segue. So the FCC is not hip with the whole thing about how we're getting all of these spam robocalls to our cell phones and spam text messages that are just the same thing. It's just a text instead of a phone call. And they want to change that. So Tom Wheeler, the FCC chairman,
My hero.
I'm glad he turned out to be who he is, because I was really worried at first that he was just going to be a champion for like the cable industries, and it turns out he's got consumers at heart, so that's really cool. And so what he's doing right now is he's put together this task force, a robocall strike force is what it's being called. And it includes 33 different companies, and the companies are all working together to come up with what Mr. Wheeler wants, which is concrete plans for moving forward to be able to stop this whole robocall unsolicited thing from happening. And this group of companies includes Apple and Comcast and Google and AT&T, and those are the ones I can think of off the top of my head. And they are all actively working together to see if they can bring an end to this. And one of the things that they are hoping to accomplish, and this comes directly from AT&T CEO Randall, I just forgot his last name, Kendall, is that right? Anyhow, AT&T CEO, he said, Randall Stevenson, that's it, thank you. One of the things that they're pushing for is a caller ID system that is more secure and is verified. So when you get an incoming call, you know that the caller ID that's showing is what it really is, because spammers are doing this thing where they spoof caller ID. So you don't know where the call is really coming from, and they want to put an end to that. I think that's a great idea, assuming you can actually get all of the carriers on board, because if you don't have every single one of them on board, then it just doesn't work.
Well, yeah, that's the trick, right? Is it and just as a little bit of history, since the days where people could buy T1 lines, people could easily spoof the caller ID of a call. And since then, it's actually gotten easier. But if you had a T1 line, it was basically up to you. You just kind of wrote in whatever you wanted for each of the lines, and you know that was that. So if you got the T1 for voice, obviously, if it was for data, that was different. But yeah, the caller ID is sort of a joke. You can even change, at least there was a time when you could go in and change your own caller ID for your cell phone, just in for AT&T, at least in AT&T's web interface. I don't know if that's the case anymore.
But, I remember I had to do that because my caller ID was completely messed up and they couldn't fix it.
So, right, it was up to you to fix it. Right. Yeah. So it is... caller ID is probably best viewed currently as the way a person chooses to identify themselves.
Self-identification and not caller.
If we're going to get geeky about it, it's a self-signed certificate, right? In many cases, certainly not all, but in many, and we're looking for the analog to a root signed certificate. And that's really the trick, is you need to get everyone to agree on what the roots are. And then you have to get everyone to subscribe to those. I mean, and and publish their data in the same way. So it's a great idea. And I mean, you know, you can tell probably from the way that I'm talking, if anybody didn't know, I know you guys know, but I've spent my week migrating Mac Observer to all HTTPS. So I've been dealing with certificates and all that stuff all week. Mm-hmm. And roots and signing and making sure everything's right. But it is a good, it's exactly what they want to do here, but it's going to take a long time. I don't feel like this is an overnight switch that can be flipped, because not only do you have to get everyone to agree on how to do it, they then all need to change their systems to do it. And part of what they're going to agree to is going to be how difficult it will be for them to change to it. So it's, you know, we're going to wind up with a solution that's imperfect, mm-hmm. because of the friction it will take to move all the phone numbers to this new caller ID system.
Yeah.
Back, I should say back end of the caller ID system. It'll still send the pulse the way it sends it. That's all fine and good. Mm-hmm. They don't need to change that. They just need to change the way they verify who is whom. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Sounds like time for an RFC, but, you know, that's just me being a geek again.
Yeah, well, maybe they should have asked you to be on the task force. Strike force.
Well, yeah, strike force is probably the wrong term. I think task force is the right term, and it needs to be people with level heads and not in a rush, and they put it together right, and then they say by such and such a date is when we want it, and everybody ratifies, and off you go. And I make it sound so simple, don't I?
Yeah, if only it were that simple.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm hoping is that, because this is a group that includes more than just cell service providers, that will get some really interesting ideas that they can work with, and maybe they can find ways that are effective without being overly cumbersome for addressing the whole spam thing. The irony for me out of this is that as I was writing my article this morning about this, my phone rings, and it was a local number. I answer it, and it was a spam call. And
brilliant.
Yes. And so I blocked it like I always do. And I'm averaging about two of those a week right now, which on one hand, that's not a lot of calls. But on the other hand, twice a week consistently, and that's just me. How many other people are getting hit with these spam calls all the time? And based on the number of complaints the FCC gets, it sounds like a lot.
I have a thought.
Okay.
It seems to me that what we're dealing with here is a technical solution to solve an annoying problem between two competing business interests. So you have the FCC in the middle with getting a lot of complaints from customers. That translates into annoyed cell phone customers, which is not good for the carriers. And then you've got the marketers who need to make robocalls to make money. And so what you've got is you've got a warring technical interest. And in my experience, when you've got two groups that are warring technically who have competing financial groups, there's no end to the competition. And that if there's any holes or lack of complete solution on the part of the strike force, the robocallers will figure out some new inventive technique, as we've seen on the internet with malicious groups.
Yeah, it's true.
So I'm not. That's the first observation I have that makes me not too optimistic about it. Plus, it's already illegal to make marketing calls to cell phones. And I take it that what they're doing is they're saying, well, we didn't know. Is that what you guys have observed? Because I'm getting a lot of these Caribbean, you've won a Caribbean cruise to my cell phone.
Mm-hmm. Is it still illegal to make those calls?
Yeah, we did that with
phones?
Kelly.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a PDO with Kelly Guman, and we checked the FCC website, and they said, okay, yep, it's still absolutely illegal to make marketing calls to cell phones.
Yeah, the key word there is unsolicited. So if it's from a company that you have already told, yeah, it's okay to call me, that's different. But these unsolicited calls we're getting, that's the problem.
Got it. Okay. So there's the fine line that they dance, the either I didn't know or no, we have you on our list from this other thing when we did a yes. totally different thing. Right. Yeah. I got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Well, yeah, I know. I think the cat and mouse game will continue. And that's why, I mean, I come back to it, but they should look at the certificate issuance thing and the whole way that SSL certs work, because for the most part, that's a pretty robust system that survived a lot of this. I mean, you got to worry about man in the middle attacks and that sort of thing, but otherwise, it's not bad. I don't know. I can't imagine. I just can't imagine this working. I think the cat and mouse will go back and forth like two or three times, and then the phone companies will just punt, because there's no profit motive for the phone companies in this.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Unlike the internet, where people are just where security is an actual concern to lots and lots of people, and B, there is this mentality of and also it must be pure, and so all of the folks that are writing all these open source things like OpenSSH and all of that, upon which the entire internet is built essentially, are just doing it because they do it, in part.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not convinced that a handful of corporations are going to have enough momentum with that motivation.
Yeah, that's going to be a problem. If there's not an incentive to make a change, then it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, and to John's point, I mean, you can't just do it once. You're going to need to stay on top of this because it's going to go cat and mouse. So unless
right.
you're committed for the long haul, let's not even bother. And I don't say that to be dismissive. I just, the reality.
Well, what I was going to do was lead into a second part of the discussion, which I have reflected on since I first mentioned it. And I don't know if it's a good idea or not, but if this is something that customers complain to the FCC about, if this is something that's vastly annoying, let's just put an end to it. Let's just say marketing calls are illegal, period, to any phone number, and just put them out of business.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I know. So that's the I thought, that was my initial thought, but that ain't going to happen either. So.
No, that's right, not going to happen. Right.
Yeah, there's too much money in it.
Yeah, so my feeling is a lot of this is going to come down to companies like Apple and Google doing the sort of things that they can do at an operating system level. Like in iOS 10, we're going to get that new feature that helps us potentially identify spam calls as they're coming in. And Google can do something like that. And then AT&T, they're offering a blacklist tool to some of their Android customers. We can block incoming calls from specific numbers on our iPhones if you're running iOS 9 and 10. My guess is that a lot of the cat and mouse is going to be companies like Apple figuring out clever ways to help us reduce the number of spam calls, and then the spammers figuring out a different tactic. That just doesn't sound all that reassuring, does it?
Nope.
No. Yeah. Well, it looks like we're just kind of stuck with spam calls for a while. All right. Well, instead of just sitting here moping about that, let's talk about something that's probably a little more productive, or at least something that can make us a little happier, hopefully.
Where could I use that?
Yeah. Okay. Well, great. Then we'll make that happen. Okay. So one thing that's been kind of eating at me is that when Evernote changed their pricing structure, and I'm not angry with Evernote for changing their pricing structure, just to be clear. I mean, they have a business to run, and they need to make sure the services they provide to people stay available. So they had to change their pricing structure. For me, what it meant was that instead of having all of my notes across all my devices synchronized in real time, I could have all my notes going between two devices and nothing else, because the paid version of Evernote wasn't offering me anything that that I needed to actually be paying for. So the only thing that I would get by paying would be that I'd be able to continue syncing across all my devices. So I looked to Microsoft OneNote.
The bait and switch of freemium.
Right. Yeah. And
moving the line to make it that more people need premium as opposed to free. And right. It happens all the time. And I mean, there's a lesson in that totally separate from where we're about to go with this. But, you know, beware of all the services that you use that are free.
Right. Because at some point they may not be.
That's right. Or may not be in the way that you need them. So.
Right. Which is what happened for me with Evernote. And that's okay. I mean, they're doing their thing and their business model is working for them. And it just wasn't a service that I needed to pay for. So enter OneNote. But the problem was I have all these notes in Evernote. And since I'm not a Windows user, I did not have a utility available to me that would allow me to migrate from Evernote to OneNote, but that just changed. Microsoft just released their Evernote to OneNote importer tool for the Mac, and I tried it out this morning, and it worked perfectly. I'm now officially a OneNote user.
So I'm curious about this.
Yay, Satya Nadella.
Yeah. Right, well, yeah. So I'm an Evernote user, mm-hmm. and I am a paid Evernote user, but you know, it's not that I enjoy the process of paying Evernote, whatever it is, $50 a year. So I'm curious about this. But I'm also hesitant. I'm used to paying Evernote, whatever it is, $50 a year. So it's not like I have to change, or it's not like changing instantly gives me something that I was missing, like it did for you, right? This change makes a lot of sense for you to just dive in and you know, unless you really hate it, you don't intend on going back.
Right.
For me, it would be, okay, you know, I live here. I use Evernote a lot. We use it a lot for Mac Geek Gab prep. So it would be a change to me and John Braun, you know, to do this. And so I'd want to think about that. The importer will pull everything in. What would happen if I do that and then down the road want to do it again because I've stayed in Evernote, but I wanted to mess around with my data file in OneNote? Like, how easy would it be to wipe things out in OneNote, or how does the duplicate detection work? Or was there anything like that you saw when you did this import?
Okay, the way the import worked, the advice that I would give people, since I haven't had an opportunity to try and overwrite my data, it would be, if you are going to move from Evernote to OneNote, but then you're going to continue to use Evernote for certain things for now, make new notebooks in Evernote for those things, because you can import per notebook into OneNote. And my guess is that's going to be the safest way to do it, because then you could just select those new notebooks, import those, add it to everything you already have, and away you go.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I like it. Yep, that's good.
Yeah, and my guess is that this is a tool Microsoft plans on keeping free, because Microsoft wants to be everywhere. And one of the ways they can do that is by giving us tools that we can use for free that become gateways to their other paid services. Like, you know, I mean, you can use OneNote for free, but if you have an Office 365 subscription, well, now all of your OneNote stuff links directly into everything that you're doing in Word, Excel, PowerPoint, whatever.
Right. Right.
So,
Yeah. I still have trouble getting over the double menu bar thing in Office 365, where and OneNote's got the same thing. There's the true Mac menu bar at the top where you would expect it, and then there's this, like, you know,
and then there's secondary. The in-app menu bar. Yeah.
Yeah. The in-window menu bar is a, yeah.
It's, yes, like, in-window. Yeah. That part's weird for me, because I'm just not into using Windows apps, and that's how this works. You've got,
it doesn't feel like a Mac app as much. It feels, that part of it feels like a Windows app. It's weird. It's, yeah.
Unless you use it on iOS, And then right. It's beautifully iOS. I mean, they nailed it there.
Yep.
But on the Mac, yeah, it feels like they're giving us a Windows experience on a Mac.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get that that's part of their whole one Microsoft thing. But that's, I think the whole one Microsoft thing is stupid. It shouldn't be about the app. It should be about the platform.
Mm-hmm.
And you should, the app should feel comfortable on the platform that you're using it at the time. But that's just me.
That's a lesson that Adobe learned many years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
They tried to do that. Let's make it exactly the same on Mac and Windows. And while they are very, very similar, strikingly similar interfaces on both platforms now, they embrace the differences between the two.
Right.
Which is a good thing. And now Microsoft needs to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyhow, just from it playing with the importer tool today, it worked great. And I'm very pleased with that. So if you want to make the switch over to OneNote from Evernote on your Mac, now there's an easy way to do it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hey, we're out of time, so we need to wrap up. Dave, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
And John, thank you for being here as well.
You're very welcome.
And listeners, thank you for being here. And I'm going to give you a teaser. You need to make sure that you remember to listen to next week's shows. All of them are just fantastic. I'm going to be talking with some incredibly talented musicians that are in the Apple community. And it's loads of fun. Dave, you know a little something about that, too.
I might know a little something about that. I'm looking forward to hearing all the episodes next week.
Yep, and I'm looking forward to it also. So be sure and tune in all next week so you can hear all those episodes. Thanks for being here. We'll see everyone on Monday.